Welcome to A Dopamine Kick.
Yes, another ADHD podcast.
We're your hosts, Sparky and Shell.
Join us each week and we can hyper-focus together on all things ADHD.
This is our journey to diagnosis, the challenges, frustrations and humour that come when living with ADHD as adults.
Let the interrupting begin!
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 96 of A Dopamine Kick, and today we are going to be talking about all things ADHD and people pleasing. I'm like literally wringing my fingers together as I said that. I think this is going to be such an uncomfortable episode for me.
You may have noticed that this episode is late again, and it's because we've ADHD'd again. And we forgot last minute and we didn't have a topic, but we're here, we're talking, so we apologise for being late for about the sixth time now. So I think you're just going to have to get used to the fact that we said it's going to be a Sunday, but we're a bit inconsistent, so we'll try to keep it as much as a release on Sunday as possible, but it's not always going to be possible with ADHD. I'm sure listeners of the podcast will understand the scenarios that we find ourselves in, and you can support the podcast by donating to us. All the links will be in the description, and if you do donate, we really, really appreciate it. It all helps the podcast, so thank you very much. So as Shell said, this week we're talking about people pleasing, and people pleasing is a behavioural pattern that basically means that you need excessive approval. Well, for me anyway.
Yeah.
There's times where I do like conflict. If I'm doing something impulsive, then conflict can happen. But most of the time I like to I don't like any attention on me. I just have difficulty setting boundaries, and I think this week some of the stories that we're going to tell you, you're going to be able to understand that.
Yeah.
I'm sure that you'll be able to resonate with some of these stories as well.
Yeah, so this topic came about because of, I don't know if you want to kick things off, Sparky, and discuss your recent visit to the opticians.
Oh, right. So this is it's a little bit of a long story, so I'm going to try and cut this down as much as possible. So I was on TikTok and found something online that I thought, if you put into your eyelids, you will grow your eyelashes. And when I was a kid, I jumped on a fire and burnt my eyelashes off. So I've never had amazingly good eyelashes. And so I thought, ooh, product that grows your eyelashes. Let's have a go of this. So I ordered it, it came, I started to put it on my eyelids. Keep in mind that I think it was last episode I talked about how I was already having an allergic reaction to something in my house because my eyes were streaming all the time. So God knows why I thought that putting something else in my eyes would be a good idea. But anyway, here we are. So I did that for a couple of days, noticed my eyes were stinging and burning, but there was a lot of symptoms that I'm not going to go into detail about, but I phoned the doctors and the doctor said to me, we'll give you this, but you need to go and get your eyes checked in case you've got a problem with your eyes. So I was like, he doesn't know what he's talking about. This has only happened since I put this in my eye. It's definitely something wrong with the fact that I've got an allergic reaction from putting this in my eye. So anyway, booked an optician's appointment. Obviously, had to book an optician's appointment like last minute. So it was like 20 minutes before the appointment. So when I arrived, they kind of were expecting me, but was a bit behind because I've just slotted myself in at the last minute appointment. And when I got there, there's a person that you need to see before you go in to see the optician. And she's asking me all these questions. I'm like, oh yeah, I've put this stuff in my eye and I've got all these problems. I can't see very well. I've got pain behind my eye. She's like, oh, I don't think we can see you. That's a different appointment. And I was like, but I've came all this way round the corner. But I've came all this way.
Yeah, it's took me a long now.
Well, it hasn't took me a long time, but it's took me mental energy to get here. So she's like, okay, we'll see what we can do. So she comes back and she says, just don't mention to the optician that you've put something in your eye and you'll just have a standard eye test. So I'm thinking at this point, this is brilliant. I'm going to get my eye test. There's going to be nothing wrong with my eyes. It's going to put all my worries to bed.
And what could go
I'm
wrong?
I'm going to walk out of it. Yeah, what could go wrong? So she's checking my eyes for like pressure, and I'm saying to her, so when I see the optician, what do I say? Because I was forgetting what I was supposed to be saying. She was like, look, just don't mention anything was put in your eye and it'll be fine. You'll have your eye test and you'll go away. So anyway, I did that. I'm sitting in the optician's. The optician comes out. She takes me in. She goes through the eye test. And she's doing it really, really fast, and I can't comprehend what she's doing. She's obviously in a rush because I've slotted myself in. So instead of just saying to her, can you slow down? I don't understand what you're talking about. I'm going, yeah, that looks a bit better. That looks a bit better. Don't really understand. Next thing I know, I'm being led out to a wall full of glasses, and she's saying that I need glasses, and I'm there like in complete shock thinking, what the fuck? I don't need glasses. There's nothing wrong with my eyes. There was nothing wrong apart from the inflammation beforehand. There was nothing wrong with my eyesight before. So I'm stood there like, oh crap. So she's leading me out to this wall of glasses, and she's like, can you help this gentleman choose his glasses? And I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? So I'm stood with my glasses, and in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm not going to wear these. I don't know what to do. I feel like they're all watching me. I need to buy them now. So maybe if I just select a really cheap pair of glasses, then I can just quickly leave. So I'm looking at glasses, and she's like, yeah, so what ones do you like? And I'm like, I think I'll have those ones. And I put them on. I look like Harry Potter. And then I put some other ones on, and then I look like Jeffrey Dahmer. So I'm in the waiting room, and I can't help myself. I'm just impulsively saying, I can't wear these. I look like Harry Potter. I look like Jeffrey Dahmer. And the woman's going, you'll get used to them. You'll get used to them. But in my mind, I really don't want these glasses. Like, and I can't say no. I'm leaving the store. I don't need these glasses. I'm not having them.
And you may not need them.
I got coaxed into buying these glasses because it was just so embarrassing. I've made a massive drama out of it. I've then accused the optician of lying because I needed to get out of buying the glasses. So I'm saying, you know, she didn't really check my eyes properly because she didn't know that I had this serum in my eyes, and it's all to do with the serum. And I don't think I've got a problem with my eyes. So they're doing multiple tests in the waiting room, which they're not supposed to do.
Oh, trying different glasses on. Like in front of everybody.
In front of everyone. And it just got to a point where it was just so embarrassing that I didn't even end up picking the cheapest glasses. I actually ended up picking a pair of glasses that I thought looked the best. So they actually ended up costing more. And then when I got to the desk, I didn't realise that I was only paying for the frames. And then they put an extra like £100 on top for the glass that goes in
lenses,
it. So she's like, oh, that's £170, please. And at that point, I was just like, I don't know what to do because I'm not going to wear these glasses. So I made one last ditch attempt of trying to make this boundary by saying, I just don't think I'm going to wear them. And she goes, oh, you will. And instead of saying like a boundary, no, I am not going to wear these. They'll be in my car on the way home and they'll never get looked at again and probably stood on and broke because I don't have a problem with my eyes. I accepted the glasses and I paid £170 and
God.
That's the story. And that's what I mean about difficulty setting boundaries. Had I just been a normal person, I could have just said, no thanks, I don't want glasses, I'll have a think about it, walk out and never go back there. But now the glasses have already been like produced and they're on the way, and yeah, I've got glasses that I don't need.
Oh my God, that's so bad.
But me talking about that show, I know I'm not the only one that does it, because I know on several occasions that you've done stuff as well.
No, yeah, I definitely do stuff like that too. Yeah, no, I definitely do have people pleasing behaviours. I probably don't have an example as good as that in the last week. That is a particularly good one. But yeah, no, I definitely have people pleasing behaviours. And sometimes I find myself almost like people pleasing on default. You know, like I'm not even aware that I'm doing it, but I'll suddenly have this awareness that I'm not behaving like myself or like the person I want to be. You know, like I'm letting someone walk all over me, or I'm like being really submissive about something when I'm normally quite, you know, a feisty person. And it's because I'm people pleasing, because I've like got into this cycle where I'm thinking like, oh God, you know, I can't possibly do that because then they'll think badly of me and I don't even know this person.
That was like me in the opticians. I just didn't want to leave because I thought they're going to think badly of me, but why? I'm never going to see these people again. I've never been in there in my life again. But yeah, I know what you mean. And it's the difficulty setting boundaries, because I think it's driven by impulsive behavior as well, which is this desire to avoid disappointing other people, which then leads to sort of things like overcommitment and neglecting of your own needs, which is instead of just saying, no, I don't want the glasses, I don't care what you think about me if I don't want the glasses, please, please, please just like me. Yes, I'll pay for the glasses. I'm never going to wear them, but it's fine. And it's just, it just gets you into such hot water.
And what's super toxic is you think that like you were like that in front of people that you didn't really know and didn't really care about. It's so much worse when it's someone whose opinion you do genuinely care about outside of like the moment.
Yeah.
Then it's just next level.
The overcommitment as well, I find, is very difficult for me, which is saying yes to things that I don't really want to do, or yeah. I could be having a heavy workload and I know that I don't have time, but I still commit to doing things.
I'm so bad for that. I hate like saying to people like, no, I'm too busy, because I just think it's, I don't know why I hate saying it, because it's the truth. But like if someone asks me to do something like, oh, do you want to meet up on such and such a date, rather than being like, actually I've got a lot on that week, can we do it another time? Or I'll just be like, yeah, I'll fit you in, no problem. Yeah. And I'll often be like rushing from like one event to the next event to the next event, and like I've not got any time management. Yeah. So I'm late to everyone because I didn't factor in the travel time between one and the other,
and the food.
So it just ends up everybody's pissed off with me, because rather than just spending like time with one person, I've tried to squish three separate meetings into one day, and nobody gets any quality time with me because I'm just
chaos.
A whopping mess.
Do you know what's funny? It all stems from the need to please other people, but in the end you actually end up pissing everyone off.
You do. That's the worst part. You end up being the problem that you were trying to avoid.
Yeah. And then you try to compensate by seeing everyone, and then you piss everyone off, and then you're like, how dare, everyone's pissed off at me, I've got my mental health through the roof now, and you're all pissed off at me. And all I've done is try to be accommodating and fit you in. I find you get stress and anxiety when you constantly feel the need to please other people.
I do it with such silly things as well. So like my daughter's school is doing a sponsored walk on Friday, and she's only in nursery, so she's not really like, they're sort of almost taking part just to be sort of in the buzz, you know. I think they're only walking around the school playground or something like that, so they're not really in it. But we got a letter sent out today, this is like 3 days before the event, and it's a little sponsorship sheet, so you can collect all your child's sponsorship money for doing the walk. Now, realistically, any normal person should have thought, like, I've been given 3 days notice for this. Like, I can maybe get a grandparent and an auntie or something to sponsor, and that's probably going to be about it. And that's, you know, good enough for 3 days. I am like proper panicking about this, because after today, I'm now in work for the next 3 days. So I'm not going to be getting home till like 8, 9 o'clock. And I'm like stressing, who can I go and visit to talk to about the sponsorship? Shall I just give her loads of money and fake people's names on it? But then it says about gift aid. And like, it's ridiculous. And like, it's silly, because she's only walking around the playground. Like, it's not really for nursery, it's for the rest of the school. Like, I'm sure the reason I've been given 3 days notice is probably because we weren't included on all the other emails, and we've just been included on this last one. Nobody is expecting her to raise like a significant amount of money. She's walking around the playground she plays in every day. But I'm like, oh God, she's going to have the least sponsorship out of anybody in the school. Everyone's going to think that she's an kid that doesn't have any friends because nobody wanted to sponsor her.
So you're almost putting on your people-pleasing nature onto her.
I know. I'm trying so hard not to give it to her and be really like casual about it, but equally at the same time, I'm panicking.
Oh my God, that's funny. Oh, but do you know what though? The need to people please is so ingrained in people that I feel people that have ADHD will struggle a lot with this, obviously, as we said, because our mind just wanders. And like I heard someone say that, imagine you've got a web browser up on your computer, someone with ADHD has got like 20, 30 windows. So you feel, because you've got all of this stuff that you need to catch up with, that you need to people please more, because you feel like your time isn't, like you said, the time that you're spending with people isn't quality, because you look like you're together and you look like you're successful and you look like you're being able to go from here, there and everywhere, and you're busy doing everything. But behind the scenes, it's like chaotic. It's all falling apart. So it messes with your mental health. It messes with your self-esteem. It messes with the fact that you struggle to relax and you can't self-care. You can't do self-care. So that when you end up doing something, it's always in a rush and you don't have time to decide. And, you know, ADHD, you've got decision fatigue. Yeah. So that falls into it as well. So a quick example I'll give you of this is I wanted to have my dog neutered. He's displaying some behaviours, not too bad, but I was like, yeah, you know, he's old enough now. Maybe we'll get him booked in for neutering. It was all decided. It was all done. And then I decided that I was going to hyper-focus the night before the booking at the vet's, and I was going to look at neutering videos and read up on it, to the point where I was up till like 5 o'clock in the morning. The appointment was at 9 o'clock in the morning, so I was already no sleep. I was already stressed when I woke up. I'd already got so much information in my mind, I didn't know what to do. I still hadn't decided if I wanted to go through with the neutering. When I woke up, had an argument with Adam about it because he was like, you're changing your mind. And I was like, yeah, but I need to know. I text you 10 minutes before the appointment asking for your advice, when in reality, I could have just asked you anyway because you're a vet and just took your advice in the first place, but didn't do that. I don't know why. I kind of forgot that you were, I forgot that you were a vet. and yeah, decided when we got there that, it wasn't happening. We weren't going to do it. And there's so much anxiety inside me. And I messaged Shell and I said, if you went to an appointment and the client turned up and said this, would you be annoyed? Shell was like, oh, no, I wouldn't be annoyed. All I'm thinking...
Because that's what you said initially. You didn't ask my advice initially. You asked whether or not the clinic was going to be pissed off with you. That was your primary initial concern. It was only after that that you were like, I don't know if I should do it. What do you think?
That's true. I didn't know what to do. And like Adam was saying to me, well, what am I doing then? Because Adam was taking him. What am I doing then? I don't know what I'm doing. And I was saying to him, I don't know. Like, just go in and see what the vet thinks. Obviously, I overthink things. I did massively overthink it. It probably all would have been fine. But I think the majority of the situation is I've hyper-focused on his breed and things. So I'm like, oh, I just want to make sure I make the right decision. So yeah, that simple thing, as soon as it was booked in, it was like really difficult to back out of it because I knew that the only way to back out of it was to just not turn up for the appointment.
Yeah.
And that would have been awful.
Yeah.
I probably, if I'd taken him, would have gone through with the neutering just to please the vet.
So it's a good job that Adam went, because you decided you didn't want to do it, didn't you? And I think... had you gone to the appointment, it would have just been done.
That's what I mean about people pleasing people that I don't even know. Instead of saying, no, I need time. I booked this like last minute. I don't have time to gather my thoughts. I need some time. I couldn't do it. It's so embarrassing. Just so embarrassing.
And I think people pleasing is so much worse for people with ADHD, because we spend our whole lives being criticised for really just behaving normally, normal for us anyway. And then as a result of that, we constantly get criticized by people who aren't like us. And then as adults, that turns into just chronic people pleasing and trying to avoid that negative emotion and negative reaction that we're so used to getting.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we spend a whole proportion of our lives trying to mask some of the symptoms as well, because we don't want to appear a certain way. And I think people pleasing comes into that in a way, because you're not really saying how you really feel. You're not being assertive. You're not setting boundaries. You're not looking after your own mental health, your own self-care. You're committing to things that you don't really want to do because you don't want to let people down. And it's causing a lot of stress and anxiety.
Especially when you know as well, that's the worst. When you're committing to something and you're saying yes, and you already know in
you're not going.
Your mind, I really don't want to do this.
Yes.
No, but I will go though, won't I? That's the different. We cope in different ways, don't we? You will just be like really non-committal and then flake out at the last moment. And I'll go and have probably a miserable time and force myself.
Oh no.
But I'll move heaven and earth to make sure I'm there because I've committed to it. But for both of us, the outcome is the same. We didn't want to go in the first place. We should have said no. We feel shit about it afterwards.
I'm really flaky. I'm so flaky. But like I've said before, I've got to a point now where I think, do you know what? I'm flaky. And if you don't like it, then... even though I say, if you don't like it, then... I still feel bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't mean it. I don't mean it, really. But I did hear one thing that said, and it has changed my mindset slightly, just because I think it's because it's so... It feels terrible. It feels toxic. So someone said that if you say, if you commit to doing things that you don't want to do, if you people please, then it means that you're a liar because you're not really telling people how you really feel, which is worse. And it made me think, oh God, I don't want to be
more things
person.
For you to feel guilty about.
I feel so guilty about it that I don't want to be the kind of person that says, yeah, it's fine, I'll do it. And then people think that I want to do it, but behind the scenes, I really don't want to do it because that just sounds even worse. Yeah. But even though I know that and I try not to do it as much anymore, it still happens. It still really does happen. There are times where I just think, I wish I could just say no. But I think maybe people's reactions in the past have caused me to get a little bit like, no, absolutely. They're going to hate me. So just want to please them. But anyway, we should probably wrap that up. We should probably wrap up the topic this week. Just remember, people, that balancing ADHD and people-pleasing tendencies can be challenging, but awareness and support and effective strategies that we haven't talked about in this episode is a possibility to manage a more fulfilling life.
Maybe we should do that in our next episode, talk about...
Yeah, okay, because there are...
That means we've got a week to come up with strategies that we've never implemented.
Well, there is a couple of things that I've implemented that I think would be helpful, actually. So, yeah, next week we'll talk about ways that you can help yourself if you are a people pleaser. And if you do have any good ones, send us a message on email
please.
Or Instagram or something. Not that we use it that much, but we'll try.
We use the email.
So, Shell, I believe it's your turn for what did you ADHD this week. Do you know what?
It's my turn again.
You came up with this idea.
No, you did.
You loved it.
You wanted us to do something.
Yeah, but I swear it was you that came up with what did you ADHD this week.
I will give you that. I came up with the concept because you wanted us to do things like memes and jokes. And I was like, the pressure that is going to create at like 5 to 3 every Sunday when neither of us have remembered to find a meme or can think of a joke. I was like, at least if we do what did your ADHD, we only have to recall our own week. And that's still really difficult.
Do you know what? Sometimes I'll do something and I'll be like, that'll be great to talk about for what did I ADHD this week. And I never write it down. Then I forget.
No, same. I often think, oh, I must message Sparky and tell him about
same,
that. And then I don't.
Same. Sometimes I write it in my notes and then I can't even find it, so... Because I'm not prepared before we record. Right, come on. What did you ADHD this week? Think.
Okay. Now I have one. I do have one. So this week I have been obsessed with getting a dog.
Oh, I remember this.
I don't have a dog anymore, unfortunately. And it seems, originally we decided that, you know, after my last dog passed away, we decided we were going to wait a couple of years till my daughter's a bit older and then we'll, you know, get a dog at that point. But it seems
impulsivity.
Yeah, 2 miscarriages on the bounce, you start making poor life decisions. And one of those poor life decisions was to apply for a dog. So I got really excited about this dog.
Sorry, I'm only laughing because I know.
He'd had a bit of a difficult time in rescue. He'd been to a couple of homes and it hadn't worked out. So I kind of got into my head, I guess, that he was maybe a bit unwanted. So I was like thinking about having him, really excited. I talked to Jamie about it, talked to my daughter about it. She was really excited. Had like kept saying that he was going to walk to school every day and she was going to give up TV so she could walk the dog every day. And then I applied to the charity and found out that literally the day before, so like 12 hours before, he'd gone to a nearby. I know, gutted, and he's getting on really well there, so happy for him. And that should have been the end of it because I wasn't really looking for a dog. Spurred on by this, I was so gutted that we missed out on him that I was like, clearly I think I do want a dog. I think I do need a dog. And, you know, Jamie was unsure, but obviously that never stops me. So I've now applied for a different dog from a different charity and had a home check done. And I'm waiting to find out whether or not that's been successful. So in the space of, this has all been over, it sounds like this is like weeks and weeks in the making. This has all been over 3 days.
Yeah, I mean, 3 days ago, can we just preface this by saying 3 days ago I got a message saying a picture of the dog, lots of information about the dog.
No, that would have been 4 days ago, because so Friday is when I started.
Yeah, Friday's when I got the message. Friday's when I got the message.
Mm. Saturday morning is when I applied for the dog, and it turns out he'd gone to his home Friday night. Sunday, I then applied for this new dog, and Monday, I've had.
Can I just say that the dog that you were going to rehome was the furthest away you could possibly find in England.
Yeah, 2.5 hours, not that bad.
Well, it's like a 6 hour round trip, right? When there's rescue centres around the corner.
Yeah, that's fair.
The dog also had a lot of medical problems, and Shell says, I don't have time to do this, I don't have time to do that. I know you're a vet, but...
Yeah, but the thing is, the reason I wanted this particular dog is because it's very important that I get a dog that is good with children, that likes children, and gets on with cats. And that's quite a steep ask. There's not so many of those in rescue. So it's not like I suddenly fixated on this random dog for no reason. Like, there was a good reason, and that was because, yeah, it fits the criteria where a lot don't. But now I've found more. So, yeah.
So tell me about this new dog then.
The plot thickens.
Oh, no.
Jamie's deeply unhappy with this. But anyway, so we had the home check. And the dog that I've applied for is in a foster home about 2 hours away. It turns out the lady who did my home check lives around the corner from me, literally like walking distance. She walks in the same park that we go to every day. And she currently has a dog who's in foster but not quite ready for adoption yet. She's going to be coming up in the next couple of months, and she's really good with kids. And so she's saying to me, like, you know, if it doesn't work out with this one, you know, often the charity do prioritise, you know, where you are in vicinity to the dog, and like how much of an upheaval it's going to be to move them and that sort of stuff. So this dog is, you know, round the corner. So theoretically, I would be like higher up on the pecking order of the list. So yeah, that's great. Guess what this dog's name is?
What?
It's Portia.
Oh no.
What are the chances of that?
Bloody hell.
What are the chances? And the worst thing is, as well, is that this particular charity don't change the name. A lot of charities will change their name when they come in so they, you know, can't be identified. But they don't do this as a charity often, because the dogs are handed to them by their owners, like as a, we're struggling, we need help sort of thing. Mm. They're not seized or anything like that. So her name has been Portia for her whole life.
Oh no.
I know.
What are the chances of that?
I know, it's not a common name, is it?
No.
And so Jamie's like, absolutely not. We are not having a dog called Portia. It's like an affront to her memory. Like, she's only been dead 4 months and you're thinking of bringing another Portia into the house. And but then I'm like, I don't know, is it like, is it fate?
Then I'm thinking the same.
Of all the dogs,
I'm thinking
that
fate.
Could be round the corner from my house, there's a dog with that name.
Yeah, I think for me, it's like in memory of. So it would be an ode to Portia. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to spur you on here. I'm not trying to, but I just think it would be like a continuation, like it's meant to be.
Yeah, wow, it is weird though, isn't it? Like, I've only just thrown out all my Portia stuff, like all my, you know, named, labelled stuff, but...
Well, you know? I mean, it depends what you believe in. They do say a lot of things happen for a reason.
I know, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe the best thing to do would be to meet the dog.
I don't know. Well, I'll keep you posted on what happens. Unfortunately, I have no control over... Yeah, I don't have any control over this circumstance. I don't know when the dog's going to come up for adoption. Yeah. I don't know if I would be picked, so I can't do anything to speed this up, but I'll keep you updated. But yeah, that's what I've ADHD'd, as I've gone from not really wanting a dog, but, you know, wanting to help out a dog in need, to it becoming my all-consuming focus that we get a dog in this house as quickly as possible.
I was going to say, I know it's not in your control.
And I might be rescuing one with the same name as my most recently deceased dog.
I know you said it's not in your control, but if I know you, I know that you will make this in your control. You will get this in your control. And I wouldn't be surprised if by the next time we record a new episode, you'll have a dog. I actually wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised.
No, she's not even been neutered yet, and they don't let them leave the charity until they've been neutered. I don't think she's even got the appointment booked yet. So
yeah, but you know,
I'm not going to be able to speed this
up. You are a vet. I'm just putting that out there.
Well, I have to find out about the other dog first, the one I've actually applied for, whether or not. I won't find out till next week whether or not I've been shortlisted, and probably a week after that whether or not I've actually been picked.
Ooh,
so
it's a long time.
It's going to be at least 2-3 weeks before I find out whether I've got the original dog I applied
You're
for.
You're going to be foaming at the mouth.
I know.
I've already
I'm like literally checking my phone upwards of 15 times an hour. She's already told me that the other people that have applied are having their home checks today, with the goal that everybody's finished by Friday. So I've already got Friday as like a deadline, but I'm still checking my phone every minute in case I've missed something. No. It's ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous.
Anyway, guys, thanks very much for listening to us this week, and we'll see you next week for another episode of All Things ADHD.
Bye!
All right, that's everything this week, guys, but if you want to carry on with the conversation, join us over on our social media platforms. We're on all the major channels, and our handle is @adopaminekick.
We'd also be super grateful if you could leave us a review on the podcast wherever you're listening, as it helps us to grow our audience and help more people. Okay, we'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye.
Bye.